You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in and listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald, and I am here with a very special guest, one Mr. Caleb Porter. Caleb, thank you for joining.
Hey, likewise. Thank you so much.
Yes, absolutely. A pleasure to have you on again here. Today, we're going to be talking all things horror, I think. This is part of our Shocktober month of horror in Halloween and stuff that we're doing with the podcast here. So thanks for being on board with that. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love me my monsters. Let's get it going.
Yeah, can't go wrong. Speaking of monsters, how great is Monster Squad? I mean...
Oh, geez, yeah. Let's... Yeah, that is definitely, like, you know, for all us coming up, we're in that age group where our friends are getting, have kids that are, you know, coming of age, and, you know, what a great introductory movie to, you know, impressionable kids for starting their horror, career, I suppose.
Yeah, was it? Fred Decker and Shane Black did that one together.
Yep.
And I thought that was pretty groovy.
We got the character actor Tommy Noonan as Frankenstein. He was also, I believe, Kane from RoboCop 2. So yeah, it's got a lot of good people in there.
Yeah, Tom Atkins is in there as well.
Yes,
he plays the father, if I recall, or no, not the father. What does he play in that?
Actually, I'm not sure he is in it, to be honest.
No. I'm relating Night of the Creeps because they were both in.
There you go.
Decker directed that one, if I recall. So
the Deckerverse.
Yeah. So you had Tom Atkins, who played the dad then. I think he was a dad. He was a detective in Night of the Creeps. Yeah.
He just wanted to get thrilled. You know,
yep.
That was his whole thing.
Thrill me. Yes, that was his whole thing. You're right. Yeah, it was his entire whole thing there. So Night of the Creeps was Decker. Shane Black and Decker did Monster Squad together, and then Shane Black went on to do Lethal Weapon and all that good stuff. And
oh, yeah.
Got crazy famous. Decker and Black originally had envisioned, if I recall, a shared universe with Monster Squad starting it out and then kind of doing individual films of these creatures. And that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't think Monster Squad did well enough for that to happen. It was either that or there was some sort of a rights issue, but I think it was the box office alone kind of tanked the idea. It just performed poorly, did not do well.
They did
not know how to market it properly. Honestly, if it would have come out 5 years after Goonies, they could have said it's the Goonies of horror films, and that would have sold it immediately. But
you know, it's so crazy how, you know, people, you know, get aware of things at different times.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had watched Monster Squad when I was a little kid. You know, I had very permissive parents. So I was watching horror movies at like an extremely young age, maybe even an inappropriate age. You know, I saw Silence of the Lambs when I was in theaters when I was like, what, 8 or 9? You know, I started early. So in a weird way, like I missed out on the Goonies nostalgia because I saw that when I was in my late 20s. You know, how we all have those weird blind spots with movies. You know, I finally got around to sitting down and watching the Goonies. And, yeah, I could see how that would be very impressionable for kids, you know, in grade school.
Honestly, I would have loved to have discovered, I think, the Goonies a little bit later as well. Like, you always kind of have this nostalgic jealousy. And I mean that in that, like, if you watch something earlier on, and you take a friend that hasn't seen something and you introduce them to it and they end up loving it. And you're like, man, I wish I could re-see this for the first time with you. Like,
oh, yeah.
That moment that you really want that feel. And I don't know how it is with you, but for example, Hocus Pocus has a particular feel to it. It's a very unique film in that feel mm-hmm. that it gives you. It's rather Disney-esque, but there's also this sense of young adventure. And suspense and witches and zombies and things. So it's really cool. And it's kind of, you know, PG in its way that it's told. So it's safe. So it's a fun, safe film. But there's this particular type of nostalgia that comes with it. And the last time I saw it, I hadn't seen it in a long time. And when I rewatched it, I got like a tiny bit of that feeling. And it's like that feeling that sends, it's not chills, but it's almost like chills down your spine. It sends like an almost like a sensory overload of past events.
You know what? I kind of liken the nostalgia feeling you're talking about as a warm fuzz on the back of my head.
There you go. Yeah.
It's kind of like a warm fuzziness that you can kind of, yeah, it's almost tactile, you know? And I suppose that's what we're all chasing, you know, by looking at our old old media, you mm-hmm. know, looking at old comic books from our childhood. I quite enjoy it. And when you can really, like, catch it, it's, I don't know, it must be what these heroin users are, you know, looking for, right?
It's like lightning in a bottle. Like, when I was a kid, thinking about, like, the moments when I discovered certain particular comic books in the moment and how I felt and where I was. And when I stumble across that book again, I can get that for like a millisecond. But that millisecond feels like it's the whole day in that moment. It's a very strange feeling. But when it happens, it's wonderful. And it's the same thing with these films.
Yeah, I have a lot of love for the old Marvel characters from the 80s because... Growing up, you know, in grade school, there was a lot of, like, jigsaw puzzles, and this extends to, like, the Ninja Turtles. But mm-hmm. just, you know, those primary colors and just this bold image, like, there was something like Spider-Man saving people in a canoe from going off a waterfall. You have Hulk grabbing a school bus and keeping it from going over the edge. Like, just these nice little tableaus that they made into jigsaw puzzles. And, like, that style carries over, you know, because you can sense when a comic creator's, because you know it's basically a splash page, you know. So I'm right there with you. Yeah, you can grab it for like a second. It's like having a tomato seed. You're trying to bite it, but it keeps on going on either side of your teeth. You can like hardly catch it, you know.
Yes,
that's when you get that satisfying crunch of that tomato seed, it's like, yeah, I'm with you. It is hard to explain. I'm glad we made efforts towards it, but I know it. Exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. So those that are listening right now, we're not crazy.
This is the film. Not crazy.
We've both related it to each other, not knowing or talking prior of the event. So it's like kind of like we both experienced being abducted by aliens and didn't know until this moment. So there you go. Only the aliens is the warm, fuzzy feeling in the back of the head or the spine tingles or whatever you call it for yourself. Everybody has a name for it, really. I'm going to be curious as far as like what everybody else calls that. I think I'm going to like ask that on our social media. What is that?
It's going to end up being like fucking five paragraphs, you know, to explain what you're trying to say. And then hopefully it gets related and maybe you can get a couple more out of it. But, I'm with you. I think your inner editor will probably work it out just fine.
Maybe we'll see. we'll give it a go. But you were talking about Marvel and stuff, and I had been I'd done a podcast recently with Jack, and we got to talking about Marvel horror in the 70s and stuff, and how he's a huge fan. Yeah, and I was thinking,
probably the hugest I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's a big Marvel horror fan, big Marvel fan in general, to be honest.
Yeah.
But then you and I just mentioned that I picked up this book yesterday via We Can Be Heroes, thanks to the boys over there. They had on the wall, they had a copy of The Inhumanoids, number one by Star Comics.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this beauty had to have come out in the 80s for sure, because that's when the cartoon came out. I don't know. I think there was about three or four of these that they created, maybe a couple more. And then it was promptly canceled. Star Comics was basically their cartoon comic book line for children that they were really trying to push. They tried to get every single property that was a cartoon into a comic book form. They had deals with certain production companies and deals with certain toy manufacturers and stuff to do this. And the Inhumanoids is one of them. The Inhumanoids is very interesting because they're basically like Celestials, if you're thinking in terms of the
scale.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. The scale of who these characters are. And but they're monsters. So in a sense, they're there to destroy everything. And of course, the people of Earth do not want that. So once they catch on to the idea that there's these inhumanoids, these monstrous beings, they team up with these underground dwellers to basically put them back into a kind of a stasis of slumber in a way, in order,
yeah, kind of like a holding pattern,
right? In order to stop them from destroying the Earth. Mm-hmm. And these, if you watch the cartoon, it is nuts. It is crazy. I can't believe it got made. To be honest, it's scary as shit.
Oh, wow. I'll have to check it out.
One of these girls like sheds all of her skin and turns into this demonic skeleton lady.
Oh,
and like,
God.
As she gets transformed into a kind of an inhumanoid, and just some of the most random odd stuff happens. There's this main baddie that's just, he thinks that if everything's being destroyed, he can scoop up all the properties and stuff, and like make billions of cash, you know, and it's just
is always so ridiculous when, you know, the main thing for the villain is like a lot of money or like gaining power, but it's like you're destroying the universe, so you're gonna have like these piles of sand around you, but you're gonna have a ton of money. It's always so absurd.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a little odd.
About inhumanoids, kind of reminds me, I'd like to check out, you know, an episode or two of Madballs. Another Star Comics alumni.
Oh my God! I just picked up a Madballs comic, and it wasn't by Star.
What? Oh, okay. Is that Tops?
I don't think it was Tops either. I think it was something else.
Oh wow!
I'm pretty sure it was another independent company actually that did it, and I don't know when, but I grabbed it recently. It was in a pile of books, I think, that I got when I went to this. It was Cape and Cow, I think, which is in Oakland or Berkeley, if I recall. I think it's Berkeley.
Gotcha.
Up there in Northern California. And we went up there, me and a few pals, we went up there for the Berkeley Con, which is this convention that they had in a school, like a night school or school for adults there.
Okay.
And they had it in their little auditorium. It was a small one. You know, there was probably like, I would say 12 vendors. You know,
I've been to a couple of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing huge, but big enough, you know, that you could spend 4 or 5 hours just looking around, looking through books.
Definitely.
And stuff. You know, small town stuff. And that's something I haven't done in a while. So it was kind of nice to do. But on the way home, we decided to see if any comic shops were open. And this one was open late. And they actually even stayed open later for us. They were supposed to close at 6. We got there at like 5:45, and they were like, you know what, guys, go ahead and stay another hour if you want. We're going to be here tooling around, so we're just going to lock the front, and when you guys want to leave, you know, just let us know. So
I'm thinking they must have had dollar signs in their eyes.
I think they
probably, you know, 4 or 5 nerds coming in, close to closing, ready to raid the boxes.
Yeah, yeah. But the one guy in particular, he was already letting them know that he was going to buy a couple of these big novelizations, you know, where they have like the big bookend books with pictures of comic books in them, you know.
Oh,
the not cheap ones. And he was like, oh yeah, I'm going to get this one and this one. And that, yeah, that's probably when the dollar signs rolled in, and they were like, okay, we've got some big fish here. Let's stay open a little bit, make some money. So
there you go.
But it was also super nice. So thanks to Cape and Cow for doing that for us. We really appreciated it. So that was very thoughtful of them. Very polite.
Yeah. As much as you need another stack of comic books to read, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes, honestly, like some of the books I know I'm never going to get to, but I know they look so pretty.
Yes. Yes. I
hate
aware.
To say that, but they look so good that I just want them for presentational purposes. You know, I used to have a wall in my bathroom where I had, back in the day, IKEA had these pretty decent frames for a couple bucks each you could get. They were like $2 each.
Mm-hmm.
And they were wall frames, and they perfectly fit comic books. So I would put, I had 12 of them in total, 6 on the bottom row, 6 on the top. And I would change them out per season. So like Christmas would have Christmas-related comic books.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've seen your
Halloween.
Book that.
Yeah. It would have cool, you know, it looked great. And, but, you know, over time those frames died, and they stopped selling them, and then the cheap ones got even cheaper, and those would not hold comics on the wall for long, and then they would just fall apart. So there just wasn't any point anymore. So the wall of comics kind of went away, but mm-hmm. now it's a much smaller kind of a four-parter, a little bookshelf of books that I lay out, and I have some lights on them and stuff. So it looks pretty cool inside of one of my bookshelves.
Yeah, so if for that one time when somebody forgets to bring their phone into the bathroom with them, you know, they can look at the walls and be entertained.
So. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, if you forget to take the phone in with you and forget that, or what if your camera doesn't work on your phone, you know, then you're in a whole world of trouble. Then you just got to describe it to people how amazing that wall in the bathroom was.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually did have a couple people that came, they came out with pictures on their phone, and there was like, dude, look at this. Like, and I was like, yeah, I know, that's my book. Oh yeah, but yeah, like I had this when I was a kid, or this is the coolest cover I've ever seen, you know, stuff like that. So it made it fun to be able to do that. I always had a really good time with that. But I digress. We're getting a little out there.
For the horror, you know, my wheelhouse is basically, you know, the 80s, you know, ironically, when I was a little kid. So, you know, my wheelhouse is Monster Squad. I loved Fright Night, you know, all the Jasons and the Freddies. I just watched Freddy Dream Warriors, the third one yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But my love of Fright Night extended to the Now Comics comic series of Fright Night, where they tried to keep the story going with Charlie Brewster and, you know, Jerry Dandridge and all that. And, not very good. They're not very good at all. They suck, in fact, but the covers are cool. And I do like that it's the universe, you know, in closed quotations. So that's nice to check it out. And if I wanted to be that, you know, that nerdy guy, I could say this is canon. Although I can't imagine it would be canon by anybody, you know. Didn't you meet the director of Fright Night? I don't think
Tom Holland would allow it to be. What's that?
Didn't you meet the director of Fright Night?
Yeah, Tom Holland.
Awesome.
Exactly. I don't think he would allow it to be canon, but maybe he would. I don't know. I actually sent him a couple pictures of some of the books when I found them, and I was like, "Yo, dude, like, look what I found!" And you know, he got a chuckle out of it.
I don't think he would sign off on it if you know if it was his call. Gotta say,
yeah. Right, exactly. And I, you know, he's no spring chicken any longer, but yeah, I met him. I used to work with this guy, and this guy was a super cool dude. His name's Robert. And Robert, if you're listening, I said you're super cool. So there you go. And we, used to do like Chinese herbalism together, and that's not a euphemism for drugs or anything. It was literally, we both worked in Chinese herbs. He used to own the company, and he came in as a consultant. And I was heading up the company at the time, so you know, managing and running the online division. So he would come in, and we would talk about all things. And he knew about my love of film and my want to be a filmmaker. And we talked for a while, and he was like, "Hey," he was like, "you should come on set with me. I'm going with my old college buddy. We're gonna go. He's filming something." And I was like, who? He's like, oh, Tom Holland. And I was like, that can't be the same guy. And I was like, oh, okay. Wow. And I was like, well, where is it? And he's like, oh, it's, and it was like in the hills, not quite in Hollywood, but like close enough. Really fancy ass place up off Laurel Canyon. And I went there to go to the night filming of this film that they were shooting for a Sony picture web content that they were doing. They were doing a series of like scary shorts and stuff.
Okay.
I was filming one, and sure enough, it was the Tom Holland. It was Fright Night Tom Holland. And he was there, and he was directing, and I got to sit in and watch him direct the entire night. It was fantastic. It was so cool being a part of that. And he was super cool. Super laid back too. Like,
uh-huh.
Tell it wasn't his first day, you know, directing. Like, there was no nerves. He was just like, yeah, let's shoot this shit again. Let's try to do it this way. Yeah, Jeff. And, you know, the guy's like, yeah, sure thing, Tom. And he's like, okay.
That sounds awesome. Just to like see a modern master at work like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was super great. It was a lot of fun to be a part of that. But yeah, I didn't obviously get much time to talk to him, you know, talk shop or talk, you know, about my love of Fright Night or, you know, some of the other things that he's done, like Child's Play and stuff. So, you know, it is what it is, but it was still very much enjoyable. And Fright Night is top tier as far as I'm concerned. And honestly, dude, I even like the remake. I thought the remake was pretty great.
The remake was not bad. Like, I could see the argument that it didn't need to be called Fright Night. You know, it could have kind of easily been its own thing.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, you know, it's so funny because my good buddy Nathan, who is, you know, a lot younger than me, he likes that Fright Night. And then I showed him the old Fright Night. And he's like, oh, well, a lot of the, you know, logical inconsistency. I'm like, shut up. You know, you're ruining it. You know, but he's partial to the remake. So it's very, very telling, I guess. Just different styles. I personally love the style of that whole thing of, like, the guy next door knows that you know that he's a vampire. And just playing with the conventions of that is always really, really enlightening and fun for me. So I think that's why Fright Night, like, delivers so well. Because, you know, we all know that he is. But, you know, in the narrative, like, okay, vampires don't really exist. That's not, you know, you're crazy, Charlie Brewster. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that fact that, and, you know, they could play it a lot of different ways. Like, you know, we're not sure. The audience isn't sure along with the kid. But to show you, yes, this dude is a vampire.
Yep.
And now he's going to fuck with you, you know, like that's pretty cool. Like
that was one of the best lines of the remake where they're like, there's a vampire named Jerry.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Vampire Jerry. And that was who played that? It was
Colin Farrell.
Thank you. Colin Farrell. Yeah. And then David Tennant was the like the magician slash vampire hunter, so to speak.
Yes, and upon thinking back on it, like, that is the best upgrade, you know, for that style, because we don't really have the 80s horror people around, you know, like the monster creature feature kind of hosts. If they do, it's incredibly niche. Like, it's not like we have that on public access anymore, you know?
Right,
like,
yeah.
Down to town. So it makes sense that they would upgrade it to, like, a Chris Angel-style magician.
Totally makes sense because, you know, not everybody that's watching it is going to be our age or in our age realm or a little older to know what this is. You know, they want to catch the young kids too, particularly. And I think it's also, if I recall, they made it PG-13 too. So that changed the dynamic also. And they had to make it a little bit, you know, more appealing for the younger crowd, which I understand, you know, more eyes on the screen and so on. I totally get that. It's sad sometimes when that happens, but
very disappointing. Well, I believe the RoboCop remake was PG-13.
Yeah, and see how well that did?
Yeah, horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was doomed from the start anyway, with like their weird script about how, you know, the bottom of his face and his hand is all that remained. Like, what?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
They're basically trying to make him cyborg from Titans.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
Yeah. So we have Fright Night, we have, Night of the Creeps that we talked about, Monster Squad. Is there anything, like, now that's come out, like, for example, on, like, Netflix, Hulu, Shudder, which is one of kind of new, but not so much. It's been around for a while, but it's starting to build steam as horror becomes more and more mainstream. So,
there's a lot of great stuff. I am hesitant to really give Squid Game its due because, you know, for a lot of people, that's like this generation's Battle Royale. Mm-hmm. And me and my buddies, we have seen Battle Royale, so we know that genre. So I don't think what Squid Game is doing is necessarily that amazing. But I did watch the latest VHS movie called VHS 94. So it's a found footage series movie, and like every one of the stories was pretty awesome. I thought probably one of its strongest collections, I would say. So if you guys haven't seen it, watch VHS 94. I thought it was very well done for basically every one of the stories. That's yeah. That's I really live. I'm an old man. I watch a bunch of old stuff. I watch stuff that I missed in the 70s. I rewatch stuff from the 80s. I'm not terribly familiar with like the new stuff, but I did watch VHS 94 and it was great. Nice. Netflix had a Fear Street series out.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually read the books when I was, you know, a teenager.
Yeah. That was, was that R.L. Stine, I think?
Yes, it was. Good job. Yeah. Okay. R.L. Stine, Goosebumps, and then Fear Street.
I did not know that he did Fear Street. I only knew him from Goosebumps. And I knew Goosebumps was, you know, it was pretty childish in nature as far as, like, it was, like, young teenage, you know, kind of reading. Yeah. And that was fine for the time. But as you get older, you know, you kind of grow out of those things, which is when he started Fear Street, because that was supposed
to be actually, he was so prolific, he wrote them both at the same time.
Yeah,
it's bizarre. Like, he would have Fear Streets and he'd have Goosebumps, and they'd, you know, you'd have a new one each month. He would just write both.
That's great. And he wanted to diversify, from what I know. And he wanted to grab the older teenage audience and the young adults, you know, and kind of grab them as well. So he created Fear Street to do that. So Fear Street was always a little bit more adult. And that I didn't know. So I, you know, I had no clue. Because I wasn't into Goosebumps, I never learned about his other work. So when we saw it, I watched the, you know, it's a three-parter. It starts out in, what, 90s?
Yeah. Yes.
I think it starts out in the 1990s and 94, I think. And then it goes to like 70, 71 or 73 or something like that.
Yeah, I'm fuzzy on the dates, but it's... Yeah.
And then it goes into the 1800s, if I recall. Like,
yeah.
Which is crazy because it's, you know, it's just basically telling you the story of this this so-called witch and how she became who she was, you know, in a long form tale of going back in time then in the last one to kind of show you what actually happened with this witch. And
did you like it, Donald?
I very much enjoyed it. Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's one of those things I got to come back to. I got halfway through the second one and just, you know, like it is with everything, I never get around to finishing it, you know, because I always have old horror or something to watch. But all right, I will pick it back up.
Yeah, I think you should. Definitely. It's a lot of fun. Like, there's good acting involved. You know, it was just a really tight script for a three-part film like that to be shot and available all basically all at the same time. Feature length films. That's kind of crazy to me.
Yeah. I mean, I like that they're taking chances. From what I understand, it was a good hit.
I think it did pretty well. They actually had a Fear Street experience in West Hollywood.
Oh, no way.
To go to. I think it was back in July or something that they had it. And, I unfortunately was going to be out of town when it was taking place, so I couldn't do it. But I really wanted to go, just to, you know, something to do. Because they're, let's be honest, pandemic times, sometimes there's not a lot of things to do now. So when there are things available, you want to take advantage of it.
Oh, man, the pandemic. We did, me and my ex, we did like three or four of those drive-through, you know, experiences. And, you know, they were fun. I mean, it is something to do while you're in your car rolling through a set up parking lot, you know, for you. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was like, so basically this Fear Street is, the title of the series comes from the name of a fictional street in Shadyside, which was named after the Fear family, F-E-A-R family. Mm. Their name was originally spelled as F-I-E-R after being told that the family was cursed and that the letters could be rearranged to spell fire. Simon Fear then changed it to, and that's F-I-E-R, changed it to Fear, F-E-A-R, in the 19th century. Despite the family renaming, the curse survived, and Simon and his wife Angelica brought it with them as they moved to Shadyside sometime after the Civil War. So it's a little different in how they tell it in the film, but it's still very, very cool. And I didn't think they were going to get as gruesome with some of the deaths as they did, to be honest. Pretty shocked watching it. So for those that like gore, I don't think you might be a little sad at first, but I think you'll be able to satisfy your appetite for that kind of thing.
Nice.
Another one that I watched recently was that I've been watching. I'm currently watching right now that Jarrett actually recommended. I think it's called Over the Garden Wall.
Okay.
Have you heard anything about that?
That sounds familiar. It's on Netflix?
It is on Hulu right now and also on HBO Max. I don't think it's available on Netflix. But it's interesting. Really quickly, I'll just break it down. It says, on an adventure, brothers Wart and Greg get lost in the unknown, a strange forest adrift in time. A wise old woodsman and bluebird Beatrice help them find their way. Along the way, Wart's thoughts envelop him while the wonder of the surrounding preoccupy Greg. It's a mini-series based on creator Patrick Mahale's cartoon short, Tome of the Unknown, which features animation that evokes a nostalgic storybook feeling.
It's animation.
Art,
oh, okay.
And classic illustrations.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I thought it was like a live-action thing.
No, it's like 10 episodes long, about 11 minutes per episode.
I can bang that out real quick. Okay.
Yeah, right. Actually really cool. The storytelling, it reminds me of Adventure Time, and I was a big fan back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
So, and this came out like in 2014, so it's like 7 years old, and I'm just now kind of discovering it, which is surprising. And it's got a real Halloween-esque feel to it as well, and at some times throughout it, it can get pretty dark. But it's also very sweet in nature as well. So it is a classic, true kind of a storybook story tale. And I highly recommend it. So if you get some time, people listening and you as well, Caleb, give it a shot.
I'll take a look. I'm guessing from 2014 and it's animated. Is it like Adventure Time and like where it's wacky? Because Adventure Time was
a bit
like kind of like
it does have
winking at you a little bit, you know.
It does have some wacky elements to it. The little brother has a toad that he puts on his head, and he wears a teapot for a hat. So,
okay, I'm ready. I've played RPGs. I'm ready for this.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. You got it. Anything else you want to recommend? I know we're gonna have to wrap this up pretty quickly.
Yeah, I can't think of too much that I could really recommend without. Not making me sound like a snobby horror douche, because I'm knee deep in my Italian giallos, so I don't think that's for everybody. So yeah, keep watching your regular stuff. Keep horror alive. There's plenty for everybody, you know.
There's shot a giallo film esque film short film called Kink. For those of you that want to check it out, it's rather silly, but it is available on Rumblespoon Productions website, rumblespoon.com. You can find it there. You can also find it on Rumblespoon Productions page on YouTube as well. So if you ever get a chance, it's pretty interesting. Something we threw together in an evening, just coming up with an idea on a car ride. And I was like, what the hell? Let's film it. And we did. And it turned out pretty good.
That's one of the things I admire about you is your can-do attitude and like getting stuff done. I think that's really awesome to like have an idea and just carry it out, you know, make it work.
I appreciate it. I get way more
hats off to you, Donald. Good work.
I get way more ideas than I actually get anything done. So, you know, if you get 100 ideas and you're able to get one done, I'll take the win. But I'm the type of person that you always feel kind of like you still failed, which is odd to say. But it's true. So, you know, I appreciate that. So thank you. I also appreciate your love of all comics, particularly cartoon comics. You've actually been on a quest for me in a lot of ways to help me fill in some key holes and stuff for, cartoon comics. We're talking like Star Comics, Care Bears and Puppet Babies.
You know what? I mean, I guess this isn't necessarily for the pod, but I do have a line on some more Thundercats comics for you.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to be looking at that pretty soon. But
Yes.
So I think I have about 3 or 4 more Thundercats I can grab for you.
Oh, man, I'm in it to win it. Thank you, sir.
Yes. Okay, yeah. All right, back to horror.
And we appreciate all you guys out there in podcast land, so thank you. And thanks again, Caleb, for being on. I really appreciate that.
I love it being asked, man. I enjoy it a lot. Thank you so much.
Of course, it's always a fun time. Speaking of which, fun times, you can find more of these audio podcasts on pretty much any audio podcast platform. Odds are, if you can't find us, you know, not odds are, but if you can't find us, let us know. Reach out, and we'll make sure that we can get on that platform for you. But we're on the big ones, you know, we're on Amazon, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, things like that. And some of the smaller ones, too, like Spreaker, TuneIn, Stitcher, and stuff like that as well. We are also, we do a live podcast pretty much every Monday. Occasionally, we are off. I believe on the 18th, we are not doing one, a live one. But the rest of the month, as with our audio, it's all month Shocktober. So we're doing all Halloween related things. We've got some prizes and giveaways that we're doing and stuff like that. So lots of fun for pretty much everyone that that is wanting to listen. We have that available on the Rumble Spoon Productions page on YouTube. And you can find that, of course, by just typing in youtube.com. And if you have any questions or anything, you ever want to reach out to us here, we are also on our social medias, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can reach out to us anytime there. And you can also email us at rumblespoon.com. You can go to the website and click on that and contact page and reach out to us through there as well. So thanks again, Caleb. And thank you to the audience for listening. And if I don't see you out and about anytime soon, perhaps we'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.